Hello, I'm Barry Daniel, and this is the podcast of the Middle Way Society. Our aim is to encourage a universal approach to living a more integrated, ethical life, avoiding dogma or any appeal to authority. My guest today is Rich Flanagan. He's going to tell us a little bit about his life, why he joined the society, what the Middle Way means to him, and to what extent he applies it in his job and as a dad. We'll discuss his interest in meditation and science. He'll also talk about why he sees that for him, there is no conflict in being an atheist and a practitioner of the Middle Way. Okay, Rich, welcome to the MWS podcast.
Hi, Barry.
Can you start then by telling us something about your background and your life?
Okay, yeah. I live in Shropshire. Always have done. I work in the NHS as an operating department practitioner, which is a theatre worker, essentially a sort of theatre nurse. And I've sort of recently been involved in secular Buddhism via Stephen Batchelor's books, which has led me on to sort of the Middle Way Society.
Okay. So what was it about secular Buddhism, first of all, that you found interesting?
Initially, it was just meditation. So I was keen to learn how to meditate. Obviously, was aware that Buddhists had been doing it for quite a long time. So my assumption was that they'd probably be quite good at it and have some good advice. I wasn't interested in the sort of more religious aspects. So I was looking for books that might give me some instruction on Buddhist meditation weren't going to be over-religious. And I came across Buddhism Without Beliefs. And it went from there.
And through that, you gravitated to the Middle Way Society site as well then? Did you come via the secular Buddhism
site? Yes. Yeah, through discussions on there and talking to Robert on the secular Buddhism site and yourself.
Yeah. Okay. And why did you decide to join the society?
Well, I think as someone who doesn't have follow any religion or particular creed, it is handy to still have something by which you could sort of live your life and by which you can navigate life with. It's a tool, really, I think. And the Middle Way Society seems broadly to fit in with my view of things and how I would like to move forward in life.
And how do you see the Middle Way itself? What's your interpretation of that? Or how do you apply it in your life in a general sense?
Yeah, well, it's something I've struggled with, actually, defining the Middle Way. and it probably changes from day to day. I think the most important thing I can take is the avoidance of extremes. And I think that's not to say that you take an impartial view of everything and you sort of sit on the fence, which I think is how some people maybe read it. But rather, by avoiding extremes, you're able to sort of navigate a path between those extremes. You still have opinions and still make judgments. Yeah. You're not just going straight down the middle, which again, I think the name sometimes implies, but you're sort of, I think, meandering from one extreme to the other, never quite getting fully to those extremes. A good example, I think, is people with kind of racist opinions, obviously are quite extreme. My response to that has always been to perhaps be extreme on the other side and sort of rant and rave at them and never get anywhere. With the Middle Way Society and the Middle Way sort of view, you can take a step back. You can view these people who are saying perhaps racist and unpleasant things, view them as an embodied person. They're not just the opinions they're saying. And perhaps start a dialogue that would be more helpful. Does that make sense?
Definitely, yeah. You've spoken to me more in the past about your meditation practice and how it's been very helpful in your life. Could you expand on that a little bit?
Okay, yeah. A few years ago now went through a course of cognitive behaviour therapy for social anxiety, social anxiety disorder, which I think is an umbrella term for various kind of issues.
Yeah.
That was very, very effective. It's been very helpful. But part of that is that process is mindfulness and relaxation techniques.
Yeah.
And through that, I thought I wanted to extend it to something more formal, like meditation. I'd read a few articles about it, saying that there were real benefits to it as well. And people have been doing brain scans and found that people who meditate for a long period of time, there's something actually going on, and that interested me. So I thought, well, I'll give it a go.
Yeah.
I meditate regularly. Once a day, if I can do it, and I don't see it as an extension of the cognitive behavior therapy. I don't do it as a self help kind of thing. But I do find it enables me to engage in real life situations perhaps better than I would if I wasn't meditating.
Yeah,
and it also, I think I've spoken about this in the past, it also cured my insomnia. Or holds it at bay.
Right. okay, another question. To what extent do you think you apply the middle way in your everyday life, like your job or your role as a dad? You've got a young son, haven't you?
Yes, yeah. So, again, I think related to the meditation, which I apply to my job, and also to some of the Buddhist teachings, which I've come across whilst researching meditation. I think from the middle way point of view, with my job, obviously I'm involved with, I currently work in recovery, so waking people up after anaesthetics.
Yeah.
You need quite a lot of patience.
Uh-huh.
In terms of, patience with patience. you have people who can be in a lot of pain. You can have people who are very aggressive, often confused when they're waking up. And so you need to be very patient. You need to be certainly in the moment. It's not very good to be daydreaming, when you're monitoring someone's heart rate and breathing.
Yeah, yeah.
I am a bit of a daydreamer. So I think, that's more of the meditation helps with being present in the moment, and those skills I'm able to take to the job. With the middle way, I think really it's patience, perhaps understanding, and being able to step back and view each situation as it arises, and avoiding extremes that may come about as a result.
And how old is your son now?
He was two in December.
So what's that experience been like, the last 2 years?
Well, excellent. I mean, I've really loved almost every minute of it.
Yeah.
And again, the sort of a Buddhist view and a middle way view, I think, has helped a lot with bringing him up. Again, there's patience, understanding. I mean, he's a toddler now, so he's having all sorts of mood swings and throwing things around. And and it's easy to become emotionally involved in these events, which I don't think is always good, because you may respond with anger, or you may even become upset. I think it's important, certainly with a toddler, not to get into that game with them.
Yeah.
And so a sort of a middle way view in that scenario, I think, is, again, to me, it seems to be about taking a step back.
Yeah.
And being able to assess a situation, maybe assess the reasons why someone might be behaving in such a way. And then you're able to respond to that more effectively, rather than just rushing in with either emotion or even rushing in with just pure logic.
Yeah, yeah.
You're able to use a bit of both and find some balance.
I often say, you might not be able to count to 10, but you can often count to 1 or 2, can't you?
That's right, yes.
That's a bit of space. Recently, you posted a very interesting article on the site about your views on science and how that relates to the middle way. It's obviously a subject you're very interested in. Could you just expand a bit on that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it is just an interest. There's no. I mean, obviously, my job is evidence based and is based upon scientific research. But other than that, I'm certainly not trained in any scientific thinking. Yeah. I tend to read popular science books, so it's a hobby rather than anything more. It's probably the biggest source of sort of awe and wonder for me is science. I don't know, examples. The best example is looking up at the sky, and you know, just looking at the sky itself is beautiful and can create awe. But when you know that, you know, some of the stars you're looking at are perhaps you're looking at something that's thousands of years old.
Yeah,
you're looking back in time, or you're looking at something that the distances are beyond comprehension, the periods of time are beyond comprehension, and yet science tells us all these things, but then enables us to look at why it's telling us. You know, you can go and look at the evidence, you can look at the arguments around it, and I like that aspect.
Yeah.
But certainly, yeah, lots of awe. You know, time travels slower if you're up in a plane than it does on the ground. It makes no sense. And again, if someone were to just tell me that, I probably wouldn't believe it. But you're able to go and have a look at why that is and think critically about things. I think science is important to be critical of everything. And I think science, when done properly, is one of our greatest tools for critical thinking.
Presumably tied in with this interest in science, does that feed into your position as an atheist?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I haven't always been an atheist, agnostic, whichever term you want. I was really brought up in a not very strict, but in a Christian Church of England background. I went to Sunday school. I certainly believed that there was something. I couldn't believe that everything had been created without some intelligent designer behind it. I believed in evolution. I believed in the Big Bang, but I thought probably something had kicked it off. I then read the God Delusion when it first came out.
Yeah.
And that posed a lot of questions about the assumptions I'd made about the creator, and sort of challenged them in, I thought, quite an intelligent and reasonable way.
Yeah.
It's an important book, I think, The God Delusion, regardless of what Richard Dawkins has done since or the personality surrounding him. I think the book itself is part of an important dialogue that probably needed to happen.
Yeah.
So really that book, after reading it, I became an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
To the shock of my mother, who I didn't realize was as religious as she was until I told her I was an atheist.
It's interesting though, Richard Dawkins himself doesn't describe himself as an atheist. He says
no, he doesn't.
He's an agnostic. Yeah,
that's right. I think probably I don't think there are many pure atheists. I think most atheists are actually philosophically or intellectually agnostic.
Yeah. So what are you?
Well, I think intellectually, so an example would be, I don't take an active belief in, if we just use the Christian God as an example.
Yeah.
So people who are Christian believe that God exists. That's their positive belief, isn't it? I don't believe that he exists, but that's not the same as saying he definitely doesn't exist. There's no possibility of him existing. I just don't have a belief that he does. I don't have that positive belief. So I think in that sense, I am a hard agnostic, I think, is what Robert would say.
Yeah.
And I accept that. I think that's fine. From a practical point of view, the side effect of being a hard agnostic is actually you live your life as an atheist. I live my life as if there is no God. There's no hell. It doesn't concern me. I don't worry that my son is going to burn eternally in a lake of fire because I haven't had him imprisoned.
You have no God-shaped hole in your life.
That's right, yes. And so for me, I think practically, I'm an atheist. Intellectually, I'm probably hard agnostic.
Okay. Just developing that a bit.
Yeah.
Do you also reject aspects of theism that are not necessarily dependent on dogma or belief, such as an interest in community or meditation practices or ritual?
No. So I'm not anti-religion. Right. I think when you say you're atheist, and this is partly the fault of people, I guess, like Richard Dawkins and the sort of so-called new atheists. People perhaps assume, wrongly, I think, that you're anti-religious, you don't like God, you don't particularly want to be around religious people. That isn't, in my case, is not true. The fact that I don't believe that God exists, I regard him as a fictional character, tells you or anybody else nothing about what I think about him or what I think about Christianity. All it tells you is that I don't happen to believe that it's true other than in fiction.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I think an analogy of that would be Obi-Wan Kenobi from Star Wars, who I also view as a fictional character. I can't prove he definitely doesn't exist, and I think there's a possibility he might. George Lucas may have had a vision from some other dimension. I don't know. I'm not, but I live my life as if he doesn't exist. I treat him fictionally. So in that way, I'm sort of almost atheistic about Obi-Wan Kenobi. Doesn't mean I don't like Obi-Wan Kenobi or don't like people who like Star Wars. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. But you, nevertheless, you still find Obi-Wan Kenobi meaningful, don't you?
I mean, I don't worry about disturbances of the Force or anything,
no.
anything like that.
I suppose what I'm driving at is there are people who see themselves as theists or religious who, while being agnostic about the existence of God,
yeah,
and nevertheless find God meaningful in an embodied, experiential or archetypal way. I'm thinking of the Quakers here or there are various mystical traditions.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I find the idea of God particularly meaningful in that way. I think it's interesting as a human sort of a human phenomenon that we have these beliefs and we have these religions. I think it's interesting from that point of view. I don't find it particularly meaningful. Of course, within the texts themselves, which I would say are almost certainly written by and constructed by people, there are things of use and things of value. I think the difficulty comes that actually, as well as the things of value, there's also some teachings that can be very harmful and very damaging. And I think sometimes it's difficult to separate the two.
My partner, Katie, describes herself as an anti-theist in that she thinks that, all things considered, a religion causes more harm than good and we'd be better off without it.
Yeah.
Can you relate to that at all?
I'm sort of partially sympathetic to that view.
Yeah.
And certainly before my study of Buddhism and my association now with the Middle Way, I was probably a sort of almost fully signed up member of that sort of school of thought. But again, avoiding extremes, I'm able to look at that. I was sort of an anti-theist, but I liked and was interested in religion, which seems like a kind of paradox. But, I love churches. I love religious iconography. I love some of the art that's been done. I like the literature.
Yeah.
I just wish people perhaps or didn't believe it as true and didn't make judgments based upon these teachings as a literal truth. I've become more tolerant. I'm trying to be more tolerant of people with different views. I don't argue with people quite as much as I used to. I used to argue with Christians and whoever in friendly kind of way, but I often try and challenge their views. I try and sort of take a more understanding approach, a more tolerant approach. And I think there's a lot to offer. I think there's obviously a human need for people to have religious beliefs. I think there's something very fundamental about it. But I think something like the Middle Way Society goes some way to filling that God-shaped hole.
Yeah. I came across an interesting distinction recently. It was something Robert actually said, between the notion of orthodox and orthopraxis. And he was saying that certainly when it comes to Western monotheistic religions, especially Protestantism, they are orthodox in the sense that the focus is on belief. But in the East, I don't know if I'm saying this the right way, they're a lot more orthopraxic in the sense that there's a lot more focus on conduct than belief. And I thought, I can relate to that to an extent.
I can relate to that. I think that was my understanding, certainly of a lot of maybe Hindu culture.
Yeah.
Rather than that, actually being about belief, is more about conduct and how you conduct yourself in this world.
Yeah.
I think Buddhism has a large element of that, although it's obviously concerned about karma and other things like that, as is Hinduism. I think that's good, but I mean, going back to Christianity, which is what I was brought up as, I think even if you take a belief in God and heaven out of it, I'm not sure that many of its teachings are actually all that useful or helpful. An argument people will often use is, actually, whether you believe in God or not, the Bible is a good source of morals and ethics, and it's good to teach your children some of the things it says. I mean, you have to edit it quite heavily, I think, to make it palatable for children or even suitable.
Yeah. Well, I suppose, I don't know if this relates to your experience, but just from that side of things, with the monotheistic religions, the ethics is very rule based, you know, like the Ten Commandments or whatever. And it's a bit like doing as you're told. You're not encouraged to think for yourself.
No.
Whereas in say for example, Buddhism, there's a lot. You can relate that a lot more. The ethics there to similar to virtue ethics, in that it's the cultivation of positive habits and practices. Is that one thing that helped you gravitate more to Buddhism?
Certainly, yeah. I think you can most of the Buddhist teachings you can sort of drop the Buddha almost, and you could just take the teachings almost fully formed. I think certainly the practical teachings about how to live your life and how to engage with other people, and I think by and large they mostly seem quite positive, and I think they're mostly helpful. I think that maybe a lot of the Eastern religions differ from the sort of monotheism, I say, of the West, but of course it started in the Middle East, which is not necessarily Western, but the monotheistic religions, I'm not sure, are quite as helpful in a practical way.
One distinction, though, that is often brought up is that there tends to be more engagement ethically from the Western religious traditions. For example, it could be argued you're a lot more likely to find a Christian doctor or a Christian aid worker working in Africa or where than someone from a Buddhist community.
Mm.
Do you think that there's some weight in that argument?
I'm not sure. I mean, I mean certainly the people I work with, the doctors are... quite often they're Muslim. I work with a lot of Muslim doctors. They often go to sort of aid places. They go to Syria and these sorts of things. I don't work with any Buddhist doctors, to my knowledge. I'm not sure why that would be true. I think I'd like to see some figures, really.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that any religion compels people to act good or necessarily bad. I think it tends to be the individual. And I don't see why a Buddhist would be less likely to go, on a sort of aid trip than a Christian or an atheist.
I think the argument is, and I've heard it from some people, is that people, not just Buddhists, but people that are engaged in meditation and in mindfulness, there is an element of narcissism or navel gazing, is the term. So it's rather than being outward looking, you're more inward looking.
Yeah, you hear that a lot. And I think for me, that's a misunderstanding of what's actually happening. And I think it's probably usually a criticism that's leveled by people that either don't meditate and just see what's happening. And if you look what's happening to someone who's meditating, they're sort of sat quietly, probably concentrating on their own breath. And it can be difficult to make the link as to how that can possibly be any use to anybody other than the person who's doing it, even if it's useful to them or not. I think for me, what I'm doing when I'm meditating is learning skills that I then take outside of the meditation process. So that would be at work, would be looking after my son, or just engaging with people you meet on the street. And I think there's a real effect, certainly for me, that I've noticed for meditating.
For me too, Rich. I regularly go on retreat, and I find that through that experience, when I come back off of retreat, I feel I can engage with the world in a better way. I think I'm a bit of a retreat junkie, because that feeling starts to sort of wane after a while, and then I need to go and get another fix. So I have to be careful of that I don't get too addicted to that.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not a bad thing to be addicted to. there are worse vices, I'm sure. yeah, but I would agree with that anyway, I think. And also, you make the point there that it's not permanent, this effect. Yeah. You do have to keep it up. You have to keep practicing.
Yeah.
You can't just meditate for a long period and then expect to be to have benefits forever. I mean, some people claim that I think that has happened, but certainly in my experience, it's something I have to keep up. And if I stop for a week or two, I can notice the difference, A, in the way I engage with people, and B, my insomnia comes back with a vengeance. So.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, Rich, my last question. Are there any, for you, limitations, or do you have any reservations about the middle way, or the middle way philosophy, or the middle way society?
I always worry there's a risk it could become a little bit new age.
Yeah.
And a little bit of new ageness is fine, but I sometimes worry that it could veer off a little bit too much to sort of anything that is sort of new age or unconventional. I don't think it needs to be that.
Yep.
I think it can incorporate and embrace the unconventional, but I think it needs to embrace the conventional as well to be a middle way. Otherwise, I think it's veering off to its own extreme. And that's part of the reason why I did a science blog. I just wanted a fairly straight science blog that could relate itself to the middle way, rather than just sort of referring to people on the fringes of science who have some interesting ideas. But
yeah, I can really relate to that. That makes sense to me too.
It's one reservation. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's been really interesting talking to you this afternoon, Rich. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Barry.
You can find out more about Middle Way Philosophy at www.middlewaysociety.org.